Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of real entrepreneurs. Usually I interview people about how they built up their businesses, actually. But in this case, we're going to talk to someone who helped me build up my business. I'm trying from time to time to bring on someone who's been a part of the Mixergy inner circle to show you how we built up our company. And At first I was very hesitant about it, Rachel. I thought, nobody wants to hear about me. What they want to hear is about entrepreneurs who built phenomenal businesses. And then I realized, I always want to hear about the people who are hosting, interviewing. I want to know. And we are building a phenomenal company. And so I've done a little bit, and then a little bit more, and then I've really been enjoying it. And so I'd like it to be kind of a ongoing thing where every couple of months or so, we bring someone from the Mixergy team to talk about how they help build this thing up. The person you guys are about to meet today, her name is Rachel Kirsten. She and I met when I was at an event and someone introduced me to her. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Andrew.
And she helped me just launch things and helped me actually charge and helped me remember that I should continue to sell and not just sit here and focus on other people's businesses and learn from them, but really remember to build up my business. And she helped me do things like create new products and also create a company-wide meeting. And so I asked her to come on here to talk about how she did that and how she's building up her own consulting company, which is called Quantifying. Rachel Kirsten is the founder of that business, which helps businesses grow through educational marketing. This interview is sponsored by two great companies that helped me build up my company. The first is TopTal, where I've hired developers, finance guy, I hired a designer. I'll tell you about them later. And I'll also tell you about ActiveCampaign, which will help you do your email marketing right. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me. And I absolutely love that you're willing to like open the kimono, to borrow some people's phrases, or peek behind the curtains at, you know, the Wizard of Oz. That, you know, so many people are so afraid to like show what actually goes on. And I just want to take a moment and applaud you for that, because it's very, very, very just like being open and forthright and like, hey, this is Andrew and this is how my business runs. So thanks for inviting me.
By the way, what's the animal sound in the background?
Oh gosh, I was hoping they would be quiet. So the dogs are playing barky tag. I have border collies. I've learned just to say I have border collies because that just makes it sound so much simpler.
Do you live on a farm? You've got like a horse sometimes that will come in on our calls. You have dogs.
Yeah, so I'm outside of Austin, Texas. I have myself a nice little mini ranch, and I've got 8 horses in the backyard.
Wow.
And I'm on year 3 of fostering a sheep named Larry. So everybody loves Larry the lamb. And then the dogs are outside. I have a mama dog and a daddy dog and 4 puppies that are now a year old. So they have been the most fun.
I asked you if you can pull up some numbers in preparation. The biggest thing that we did together was launch Bot Academy. Do you have the numbers for how we did with that?
I have first year numbers. So okay. because we took that from like 2016 was like zero. 2016 was, it was, Bot Academy was like a glimmer in Andrew's eye. Like it was.
And we'll talk about how we got to that. From how we got to the glimmer and how we built it up. Okay.
Yep. And so in 2017, we actually did about $750,000 worth of revenue in that business.
And that was our first like full year of it? Kind of foolish.
First full year. Yep. We did a beta launch in January to kind of prove the idea out, followed up by a actual like real launch in May. And then we came back and did another launch later in the year, and then some evergreen sales as well.
Okay. All right. And we're going to spend some time talking about it for those of you who don't know, because I don't talk about my stuff that much. Bot Academy came out of my love for chatbots. It's a place where you can, if you want to reach your audience using chat, you can either learn how to do it yourself or hire one of our graduates who will build a chatbot for you. Let's go back to, and I'll spend more time on that in a bit. Let's go back to how you and I met, Rachel. I was invited by past guest, Dane Maxwell, to come to Vegas to see people who are part of the foundation. I remember he flew me out there. I land. There's a limo with my name, Andrew Warner. We're waiting for you. I get in the limo. I get in this beautiful hotel room. Stunning. A lot of people sitting around there. Some on the floor. Some like off this. Like there's stairs in this suite.
Yeah.
Some sitting on there. Some on couches. All like hanging on every one of Dane's words and getting coached by Andy Drish, the co-founder of the organization. And at some point, as I speak to people there, I get introduced to you and I'm told that mm-hmm. you're someone who worked with Ramit Sethi, you're working with them, you're helping them all figure out their ideas and grow their businesses. And we connected and I said, if you're ever in San Francisco, I've got an extra room. I'd love for you to hang out. And you said, I'm the kind of person who just makes things happen. Let's just do it. And you came out.
Yeah. And I know that still blew my mind because, like, you know, I came into entrepreneurship from a very corporate world. And in corporate, like, you may say, hey, come on to the city. Let's, you know, have a meeting or whatever. But Andrew was like, hey, stay at my house. And so right. I remember I flew into San Francisco. That was actually one of my first trips to San Francisco. And I'm, you know, going to get my luggage. And here on my phone is like a selfie of Andrew. Andrew sent me a selfie just because you wanted me to be sure that when after I got my luggage that I would know exactly what you looked like and not feel uncomfortable there.
And where I was.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so the selfie is like, here I am, standing right here, we'll just go together. Mm-hmm. And so I picked you up from the airport, we went together. The issue I was having at the time, and we just kind of hung out, we went immediately for mm-hmm. a walk through the Mission, down Valencia Street. I remember us hanging out in the backyard yeah. and talking. The big issue that I was wrestling with back then was, there's no freaking order in my company. Everyone would just kind of do things by memory, and they all were so proud that they were really good at doing their thing the way that they did it. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes. And like the sad thing is you're not alone. Like everybody is at that point at some point in time, because it's like where you go before you get organized, before you have systems and all of, you know, like as I have refrained from watching the new Tidying Up series, I'm saving that for later. But it's like people don't stop and tidy up inside their business. They just kind of roll with things and things are working. And if you hire great people, which is amazing, they do their jobs well, but it doesn't right. ever like fix things in case somebody's sick, doesn't show up. I like to use the word bus factor. Like, you know, what's your bus factor? How many people have to be hit by a bus
yeah.
in order for your business to stop? And at that point in time, it was like one in so many places. And now
it was me, know, like in so many places. Forward.
Yeah.
It's still me for if I get hit by a bus, the company is done, essentially. There's some unwinding period, and I feel like there's some value for the next year or two, but that's it. What we had, the problem we had there was it wouldn't last for a day, but also nobody knew what anyone else was doing. We couldn't have anyone else pass the work to someone else. We couldn't have constant improvement because I didn't know what people were doing. They were just doing it themselves. And so I kept asking you, what do we do? How do we do it? And we came up with... Actually, I remember one piece of advice that you gave me. Do you remember one that you gave me or one piece of direction?
Oh, gosh.
I could start this
we
off.
Talked about so many different things. There's no telling.
One thing was, I remember at the time, we switched from like using WordPress to document what we do to using a Google Doc. So that if you did something, there should be a mm-hmm. Google Doc about how you did it.
Yeah.
But people weren't creating the freaking Google Doc. They just do their thing. It's like, oh yeah, Andrew's asking for it, but I can't remember. I can't do it now. It's more important to just do the thing. It's more important to pre-interview. It's more, right? And you said, look, the documentation is part of everyone's deliverable. If you're doing a pre-interview, you need to have some process doc showing me how you do it. I'm not just paying you for the pre-interview. I'm paying you for the pre-interview and the documentation of how you do it. If you are, I don't know what to, this was
part of their job.
Sorry?
It's part of their job.
Yeah, and I'm expecting to see the finished product and the process doc of how you did it. And so that was a big thing. Organizing it in Google Drive was a big thing. Another realization that I had was Google Docs is not enough. Software had to manage it. Like some piece mm-hmm. of software had to be on top of the person and the process to make sure people were doing it.
Especially since, you know, you're running a virtual team. Like a lot of times, you know, if we come out of a business environment where everybody's like in one place, we can skip a lot of things because we just fix it over the water cooler. But like when you're in San Francisco and I at the time was in, you know, in Nashville, Tennessee, and you met somebody in Arkansas. And
someone else in Guatemala.
Yeah. And like you start spreading everybody out. like all of those water cooler conversations never happen. And nobody can just pop into somebody else's cube or stop by their desk or, hey, let's go get a cup of coffee and fix those problems. So you just have a bunch of people that have no idea what's going on. And so layering that, yeah, go ahead.
So that was a huge issue. I'll fast forward to today where not only do we have like process, not just process docs, but my favorite now is a checklist or some piece of software to manage it. We also now have regular meetings where as a team, we check in on those processes so that they don't get stale. So for example, the pre-interview process is something that we've really mastered a long time ago, and we had a document about how to do it. But because we have these weekly, or actually it was monthly calls on the pre-interview process, for example, the two different pre-interviewers, Brian Benson and Ari DeSarmo, they both now get to see that they were using two different processes, and they started to harmonize their processes, take the best of both worlds. They were starting to see that there were people who just weren't sure what was expected of them before a pre-interview. And we realized that. And so we go back into our process and we say, how can we let them know this is what's expected on the call and not have it feel weird? Like all those things now we can collect and we can see, here's how we operate. Now that we know how we operate, here's a hole in our process that we can improve. Here's a place that we can make a little bit better. So that's been hugely, hugely helpful. So then I said to you, Rachel, I'm noticing that when we launch something, when we create something and sell it, then there's excitement, not just internally, in fact, more externally than internally, because it doesn't feel like just a stale interview. I said, can I hire you to come in and help us create these things and sell it? And you said, do you remember what you said?
I'm going to sound like I have Alzheimer's now. I don't remember what I said. I know we ended up working together, but there's usually that whole filtering process of making sure we're all on the same page.
Well, by the way, this is why we do pre-interviews. It's your own life and you don't remember it. It happens to everybody. We're too busy living to remember the details. But there's no kind of pre-interview that I could do for this because we're just kind of, or maybe we could. Now that I think about it, there's always a way to improve next time. Here's what you said. You said to me, Andrew, no, I can't do it. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I've never taken a vacation or hadn't in a long time. I need some time to myself to go take a vacation. And so if you're interested, we can work together afterwards. So you took a vacation. I got in the groove of things without you. And then at some point we started working together. And one of the first things that I wanted to do was after my first son was born, I had a lot of time at home and I kept going through all the email and I kept seeing all the freaking people are asking me, how do you do interviews? What mic do you use? Because podcasting was starting to get hot. This was about 4.5 years ago. And I said, Rachel, I want to start creating this thing. And you and I got together to take this thing that I kind of created and turn it into a sale. And I didn't have any team calls or anything at the time. Talk about what you did to actually, I said, I'm hiring you. You find a way to sell it. Talk about what you did to bring some order to that concept.
Yeah. So, because there are so many different places to start. And what you have is what so many people have. Like you had something you were teaching. In this case, you know, we did both Interview Your Heroes, your course on how to get started on podcasting, as well as we did True Mind, which was, how would you describe True Mind, Andrew, other than the course about the beads?
How to stay focused. And I would even say that the Interview Heroes, everyone thinks of as a podcasting thing, but I actually believe that interviewing extends way beyond podcasting. That if you take a look at some of the top channels on YouTube, they will bring on, they'll do these collabs where they bring someone else on to ask them about their office, right? It's like, I feel like knowing what to ask and how to drive a conversation helps with any medium, including podcasting, but podcasting is the best for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you had something. And so I just want to clarify that because a lot of times people have an idea, but they haven't gone through the process of actually making it concrete into a course. Because that that space of going from idea and what you teach and what is your body of work, to borrow Pam Slim's phrase, you know, what is your expertise, and then how do you distill that down into lessons and put that in a course to sell? Like that is one process in and of itself. So we didn't focus on that part. We focused on the, how do you take, now that you have something to sell, and how do you connect with your audience? How do you create your marketing message and take your people who are listening to you through an educational marketing experience and give them then the opportunity to continue to learn more through purchasing the course.
And so the way that you structured it was, I remember you opened up a Google Doc that had a bullet point, a grid at the top, and a colored background. What was a colored background about?
So when you're on calls, this goes along with the whole everybody's all over the place. And like, okay, they're all over the place mentally, but they're also all over the place geographically. So in Google Docs, you can actually shade your background to a different color. And then it's really easy for everybody to remember, okay, let's all go to the green doc, the pink doc, the blue doc, whatever color it is, so that when everyone's on their laptop, you can get them all to the exact same spot at the exact same moment. And there's no question like, did you mean this one or that one or this one or that one? Now, if we shaded everything pink or blue, it wouldn't work. But when you just have one doc that's a different color, it's a really good way to center people.
And then at the top, there was a grid?
There was a grid. There was a calendar. And so, actually, it wasn't this one. But if you don't have some form of a calendar, make sure that's right side up, in your life, or a planned calendar in your life, you need to, especially for your company. Now, you know, this is one of those two sides ones. On one side is my triathlon training schedule. On the other side is just blank. But if you don't ever start out with dates, nothing's ever going to happen. We as humans are like wired from the time we're young to plan everything according to something else. You know, you can ask a 5-year-old, when is your birthday? They know. When is Christmas? They know. Like, we are hardwired from so young to so old, school years, summer vacations, like there's an event. And part of creating momentum around a product and a marketing campaign is making it into an event, because people are motivated by deadlines internally and customers love urgency.
And so where I, for example, have got this big race that I'm going to run, the first marathon is going to be from the US to Mexico. People know about it and we know that we need to do some set of things around it. What you did at the time was you put a grid at the top, which was just like your own makeshift calendar with the dates on. And you said, all right, here's the calendar. Now let's start thinking about what goes into each one of these boxes so that we know, when are we sending out this email? When are we posting this to Facebook? When are we doing this and that and setting it all up? And that was at the very top. And then at the bottom, you underneath the grid, you had a list of emails that needed to go out because that was the workhorse. Mm-hmm. And each email had it was more like an outline in one
bullet point.
Just a set of bullet points of what needed to go out.
Yeah, and in full disclosure, that was not my original. I'm all about credit where credit is due. And in that case, we did a lot of launching using Jeff Walker's product launch formula in a very abbreviated. So if you get his book, Launch, I literally figured out how to copy and paste from Kindle, which that's like four steps in and of itself. It's not as easy as it should be. And have that. That's where the bullet points came from, because it's a framework that works. Is it the best? Maybe, maybe not, probably not. Is it the worst? Not at all. Does it work? Has it worked before? So rather than reinventing the wheel and making the perfect marketing campaign, let's get something that we know will get us to a solid C+, B-, B+. Let's be a solid player in the game rather than trying to get a perfect score out of the gate. Because building a business.
Yeah. And so you were just saying,
building a business is about iterating.
And you don't want to iterate by starting from scratch. If the thing has already been done before, it's not critical to our business. We don't need to reinvent it. Let's just go with what works. So you put that out as an outline, and then you started assigning the writer, April Dykeman, who was writing for us. She knew exactly now what she needed to write and then how it all fit in together. You took Ari DeSermo, who at the time was doing, I think, customer service email. And
she does a lot of customer service.
Mm-hmm. And you said to her, I think you're capable of doing more and you can handle the email marketing software if I teach you how to do it. You brought in Rebecca Lay, you were working with her.
Yes.
What was Rebecca's role for you and what was it for us as you were working with us?
Yeah. And so when we started, Rebecca was working for me as my assistant. And so she did a lot of the project management on my side, because the way that we were running it, someone needed to help keep everything organized. And at that point in time, I was working with multiple clients, multiple things going on. And so Rebecca and I would talk about how to organize it, and then she would go do the little details of whether it's putting it into, we were in Asana at that time, or into Basecamp when we moved there, and just really support me so that when we were on a call, because we'd be on project, a lot of team planning calls and stuff, and a lot of them we did without you before when we got started. We just involved Andrew for some of them, but the core team, Rebecca, Ari, and April and I, we'd meet, we'd go through like, hey, what are we going to do? What's the strategy? What are we going to write? How do we think the story flow is going to go? And then we'd involve Andrew when we needed the details and for approvals. Most of the time, we forgot a time or two. You were very, very gracious about, you know, the whole, hey, remember?
Like, yeah, the only thing that I need approval on is if something's going on with my name, I want to see the final version of it and, you know, make sure that it's good. Yeah. And so that's another thing. I don't want to brush over that. I was not one to use project management software at all. I remember even Jason Fried hit me up one time and said, hey, I want to like kind of feature you. You're using Basecamp. I said, not really. I use Basecamp whenever it's other people's companies that are doing stuff for me, but I don't use project management for myself. I never liked project management. I always thought project management software was a little bit too much of an overhead. The way that many people on our team thought about like systems and organizing themselves as being too much overhead. Mm-hmm. I thought that way about project management. You said, screw it. I don't care. I'm going to use Asana. And you signed us up for Asana and I wasn't in on those calls. I didn't even know about it. And I thought it was great. I am totally fine letting go of stuff that I don't have to do myself. And I got excited about it. Project management software, when it was done right, was actually really helpful.
It is, because like going back to, everybody's in a different place. You need a central location for everybody to be able to look at and see, even if they don't want to look at the big picture, because a lot of people that are specialists and are really good at their specific little thing, they don't want in on what's all going on. They just get overwhelmed. They're like, no, leave me alone. But you still need somewhere as the leader. It's part of leadership. You need to be able to go somewhere and know what's going on, who is has what due when. You can manage it through email. Guess what? You're going to hate your inbox. You're going to miss things.
And then if you don't miss things because you're, other people miss it. Other people miss it for sure. I think the secret there was also not trying to use it myself on my own for the first time. Having somebody, in this case you, who had a lot of experience organizing other companies, come in and say, this is how we're organizing it, kept me from going into too many, like using the subtasks. Like you had strong opinions. We're not using subtasks within tasks on Asana. We're just keeping it at the top level, and that's it. All right, let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor. It's a company called Active Campaign for sending out email marketing. If you're out there and you're getting into email marketing in any way, I've got to tell you, I've used so many different pieces of software. I've hated so many of them. I stopped actually being negative about them in public because I may want to get the founders on here to do an interview, or I might like the founders for building up what they did. But boy, there's too many email software. Just suck so badly because they either don't have the power to do customization, or if they do, you're going to need to hire people and literally pay them tens of thousands of dollars, not a month. I've actually been at a place where we had to pay $10,000 a month to have somebody take care of your email marketing software. It absolutely sucks. I will tell you in person, you don't even need a drink in my hand. I will tell you in person which ones suck and why they suck in great detail because I've gone through it. I'll tell you. Active Campaign is phenomenal. It's not just me saying this. I talked to Saeed Balki. I said, look, you're using Opt-in Monster. What are you seeing that's being worked on that's doing a good job? Active Campaign. I talked to Sumo. These are the people who create software for collecting email addresses. I said, look, behind the scenes, what are you guys seeing that people are using well and being happy with? Because you integrate with all these email providers. Active Campaign. Everybody who you've seen me interview about Active Campaign has loved them. If you're looking for email marketing done right, you should go check out activecampaign.com/mixergy. It'll allow you to tag people so that you can customize the messages you send them based on what they've clicked on in the past, whether they've seen a video or not in the past. That means that if you're selling boots for hikers and boots for hunters, you can still communicate to each one of them differently and not tell a hiker who's like peacenik and vegan, this is going to be great when you're out there on a hunt. And the same thing for the opposite. Someone who's out there with a job, you don't want them to see your ad about how this is like a way to experience nature. No, they don't want to experience nature. All right. ActiveCampaign.com/MixerG will give you your first, let you try it for free. If you love it and you sign up, your second month will be free. They will even do 2 free coaching calls, and they will migrate you from the whatever piece of garbage email software you're using right now. Go to activecampaign.com/Mixergy. You will thank me for it. And I will tell you this. If you ever hate them or any of my other sponsors, come tell me about it. Tell my whole team. If I'm for some reason not paying attention, email my whole team. contact@mixergy.com. It goes to everybody, and I will be embarrassed to have a sponsor that my team sees my audience doesn't love. You have to love them or else I don't have to take their money. activecampaign.com/Mixergy. Even if you hate me, toss off the /Mixergy at the end. Spite yourself and not get any payment and like not get that free month just so I don't get credit for it. You'll still love Active Campaign, I promise. All right.
And Andrew, and like I know like you have sponsors and you have ads, but it's the truth. I've had clients in just about any and every software solution under the sun, and then some you've never heard of. And the folks I know that have used ActiveCampaign love it.
You know what? We're with email providers more than, like, we're stuck to email providers more than we are to a lot of other providers. If you hate my other sponsor, HostGator, you take your WordPress site, you move to somebody else. If you hate your email provider, do you know how much a pain in the butt it is to switch over? You better pick right. Okay.
Yep.
So we were doing well. You started to organize team calls. Mm-hmm. And
yep.
Team calls were another thing that were a mystery to me. I've never worked at a company. I don't know what these team calls are supposed to be like. You started implementing them without me. Mm-hmm. What goes on in a team call?
That's a great question, because a lot of times, like when we, if you've had any big company experience, like you waste so much time on conference calls. And I joke, like I miss part of my Fortune 500 career because I used to get so much done on conference calls. Like I can get all my shopping done, you know, catch up on the latest articles. Like I kid you not, and still appear present for my, you know, 3-minute blip usually at the end of the call when I was reporting out on whatever projects. But when you get to a small team, like it's an education process because everybody has to start like understanding what the big picture is so they see where their little contribution fits in. Because it's a lot of different pieces of a puzzle. And in order to be successful, sometimes you end up doing co-working on team calls. Now, it depends upon the size of the team. Early on, when we just had the four of us, myself, April, Rebecca, and Ari on calls, a lot of those were like co-working calls where we were talking about things, making some decisions, doing a little bit on the call. And then as the team grew and we got into the Bot Academy launches, what we needed to do is get everybody on the same page so we all know what's going to happen, which steps are going to go through it. Because if you've never been through a launch before, you don't know that, you know, the process, it's not rocket science. It's very systematic. You're going to go from traffic and advertising. Then people are going to opt in and you get leads and an audience. And then people are going to be engaged. Then you're going to go into conversations and sales. Then they're going to buy. Then you're going to go into customer fulfillment. And everybody touches one piece of that or multiple pieces. But when they're isolated, they don't know how all the pieces fit together. And there's no really good way to know what's happening. Like, where is the progress? What needs to go on this week? What needs to go on the week after? To get everybody on the same page to be marching to the same deadline.
But so in the beginning, you guys would be on the calls and actually do the work. So if you told Ari, here's how email marketing software is going to work, you would actually have her do it, turn on her screen share, walk her through it, have it set up. If you worked with April about what went into an article, she might start interviewing you for the bullet points that she needs and then go and write off on her own. That's the type of thing.
Yeah, in some cases. And we were able to do that because it was such a small group. And so it was more of a working call than a team call. And because everyone knew that the sum of what we'd accomplish in that hour, that Ari didn't mind like working on something else if April and I were working on bullet points for an email.
So she would work on something else, just quietly go do it. What about the other companies that you worked with? I'm on your site right now on quantifying.com/clients. I see you worked with John Maxwell's company. You worked with, who is it? Who else? The foundation, Dr. Axe. What goes on in those calls? Yeah. Ramit Sethi, you worked with him for how long?
Ramit and I spent 3.5 years working together. I started working with him back in 2010, right after he launched his first Earn 1K product.
That was the first paid course that he had.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That was his first paid course after the book. And I actually purchased it early on, found him through Tim Ferriss. And I was a student. He asked for feedback. I got to know his team real well. That was back early days, you know, small launches. You know, there were a small number of students going through. They always asked for feedback and whatnot. And then eventually his team and Ramit pitched me on, you know, hey, we want you to work with us. Let's start doing some little stuff. And I started actually doing dashboarding with him. So went through all the different pieces of software, pulled all the numbers so that every week you could see which numbers were growing and really what the state of the business was.
Well, like what kind of numbers would you look at?
Like what were the sales? So what were sales dollars? You know, what were the leads? Where were the leads coming from? Because at that point in time, it's not like nowadays where the list is, oh my God, huge. At that point in time, the list was, you know, 60,000, 70,000, et cetera. And so it's like, and that was back before everything was evergreened and systematized. And so the way that the business ran was we'd do all these little micro launches. So there'd be a period of gathering in all your opt-ins, and then we'd run a launch.
And we'd gather a whole bunch more.
Just the new people.
Okay. All right. And so you were watching all that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and helping manage all those numbers. And then that was still at the point in time where I had a full-time career. You know, I was making six figures in corporate, working for Nissan North America, driving new cars all the time.
Okay.
Best benefits that way. And you know, eventually we got to a point where I had done some launches with the team, and I still remember like that. I don't even know if Ramit even sells this anymore. It was negotiate your rent.
Mm-hmm.
It was a product and how if you lived in San Francisco or another big city to actually work with your landlord to negotiate your rent to get a better deal. All right.
Okay.
So I really wonder, I'm going to have to go like Google to see if you can still buy that on the internet nowadays. But like our first launch in some ways on that, although we did sales on it, it wasn't like some, oh my goodness, amazing thing. But because I came into, you know, the world of freelancers and entrepreneurs and digital marketing and info products, I came from a corporate background. So I was used to having to organize information and to be very structured in the way it was communicated. I still remember the first email I sent out when we were going to do the whole negotiate your rent launch. And I'm like, okay, this is who's all involved. And this is what's going to happen. And these are the timelines. And I did this via email before the meetings. And I still remember Chris Whitmore, who was doing the videography for Ramit. He's like, oh my God, this is so amazing. It's just like so relieving to like have a plan and like know what's going to happen.
To have that order.
Yeah. The start, because everybody wants to know what's going on. Like going back to what we as humans are conditioned to, we're really conditioned to like understanding what needs to happen. You know, Americans and Britons are really good at queuing. Like we're good at standing in lines. We're good at waiting. Like, but in so many things, like nobody knows what's going to happen first, what's going to happen second, what's going to happen third. And so in some ways, if you're not doing team calls, you can do it through email. But somebody's got to like have order and enjoy writing those emails because they can get really long. And then you've got to ensure somebody reads them. Like if you're on a call, especially a video call, it's really easy to see who's engaged and who's totally checked out. They're like, yeah.
Especially if you have video on, but I don't think most people do video still.
It depends. Like Zoom has changed it. Zoom has changed because it's so good at doing the whole mini screens. Like, you know, Skype is, you know, was the thing there for a while before. Well, anyway, we all won't go down the Microsoft bashing route.
When you were organizing his calls, how were you doing that?
Yep. So we had a calendar and, you know, as we grew the business and it was, you know, right about a million when I started and we had hit our first 15 million year, the year that I offboarded from working with him.
What years are we talking about then?
So first that was from 2010 through 2014.
Oh, wow. So you helped them go from a million to how much?
To 15 million in
by
3.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's hyper growth right there.
Yeah.
And what was
and
the
we
answer?
We did it all through product launches. We got a team and the team grew. And you know, one of the things Ramit was phenomenal about was knowing his audience and marketing to his audience and figuring out what products did they want, what products would they pay money for.
What's the process you went to figure that out?
So he did a lot of surveying. He did a lot of surveying. And even still, if you're subscribed to his newsletter, you'll see like all the time, there are like different surveys. Are you like interested in this? Are you interested in that? And then read through all the surveys, talk to people. In some cases, develop, you know, small micro courses or live events or, you know, like Dream Job Elite. So when we were launching Find Your Dream Job, nobody told the Dream Job Elite group that paid, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20K for that course that, hey, look, this is a beta of what Ramit's testing that, yes, you'll get your value out of and you'll get interaction and coaching and whatnot from all of that. But really, you're just a student in a beta program that we want testimonials from in order to go and then launch the Find Your Dream Job program.
It was surveys, talking to people, then creating this beta group where people were paying 10 to 20,000 to get access to it, and then learning by teaching them, and then bringing back what you learned from them to create a full-on course if it works. Got it. And so that's the process. And when you say talking to people, who'd have those conversations?
So a lot of times Ramit would have them. He also has worked with some product developers and has teamed that way, where sometimes they'd go interview them. Sometimes things would be transcribed, but I remember so well because, I mean, I have an undergraduate degree in marketing. Like, I am trained in classical marketing, and that's how I started my master's in technology. And I remember, I'm like, I've had statistics courses on how do you verify if an idea is legit? And this goes against all of that. And I just like didn't get it because, like, you know, you need a statistically significant sample. But like the difference is you're not trying to market to the masses. You're trying to market to the people that are in your audience. And so if you don't know who's in your audience and what they want, who cares what the rest of the world is going to do? Because it's the people in your audience that are on your email list that are going to buy something.
And so it was surveying, following up with phone calls to understand the thing. And there'd be even creators that would help do it. And then creating a small test often. And then if that worked, making it into a big thing. Yep. And constant launches. How many launches are we talking about a year?
Gosh, we ended up launching anywhere between 6 to 10 products in a year.
New ones or just reopening the cart on those?
Oh gosh. So that depends on the way you count it. So we did cart reopens. In some cases, products were really small. Like you'd have a big product and then you'd carve out a little niche. So in case of, you know, the Dream Job product, there was a course on, you know, overnight resume makeover. So, you know, because like building your resume was part of that, but then people would pay $200 or $300 for a course just on resume, let alone on that.
Got
so
it.
When you look at the way the product suite is built, and this is true for any product, you have a great big piece that's made up of smaller pieces. And so you can have things that are very symbiotic. And so if you have smaller products that then build into a bigger product, you've got an upgrade path for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of times, you know, you talk about that kind of hyper growth. The thing that most people miss is the price points. If you're selling at a $2,000 to $3,000 price point, you don't have to sell near as many units to get to $1 million, you know, it's 500 times 2,000. Yeah.
Got it. Yes.
Right. It's late at night. So, but would you rather have 500 customers or 2,000 customers? So part of the secret of that hyper growth is pricing at a very high price point, but it's also the matter of knowing your customers, marketing to them, getting into their heads. Going back to another one of those things that you know, Ramit was phenomenal at, so many other marketers are phenomenal at. I mean, it's like one of the things that took Evan Pagan to high success in his early days is understanding that mentality of like, what is the customer actually going through? Because it's not necessarily just marketing, it's the psychology of it.
What about at your other clients, like John Maxwell yeah. Company? He's just a beast okay. creating a lot of different books and yes. programs. What do they do to understand yeah. their audience?
Yeah, so gosh, John Maxwell was one of, that was a super challenging engagement because they come from the organization, John Maxwell Company. They come from a very faith-based culture. So while they're religious. Not per se religious.
They're not, okay. So
the marketing isn't religious, but the principles are very religious. So it's very much an upright, above board. And it was a, how do you do digital marketing? But you can't use any of the internet marketing tactics. You can't be sleazy. You can't be scammy. You can't, you know, be fake. You can't, you know, do tons of like weird discounting, you know, oh, $5,000 value. You know, for the limited time offer, if you buy it like in the next 2 seconds for $50, like we couldn't do any of that. So, but the phenomenal, they had really good people and they had amazing people working for them that cared about helping the customers. We actually launched several things with them. We did a high-end mastermind called the Executive Circle. So that was $20,000 to $25,000 per seat aimed at working with executives and giving the executives of big companies a place for mentorship with John and other people in his circles. But we also did some leadership programs where he has a leadership course that you can, you know, it's a year-long leadership course. And it was, how do you take going back to the same type of a marketing structure and then working both, you know, he has writers that write with him. And so you take your marketing director, you take your tech person, you take your writer, you take your intern, and then one or two other people pop in and out of meetings. And how do you show them that like, hey, we're going to do this place where we actually like create a marketing campaign, take people through this experience through a set of stories, talking about leadership through some, you know, samples of the course. And then we're going to take them to an actual one copy sales page. I know, like, I like so don't believe in long copy sales pages, but they work. So I've learned to suspend my disbelief because the people that read the copy actually engage and they're the ones that buy. The people that don't read are the people that don't buy.
Yeah.
But how do you do think all about, of that like, with class?
Yeah, I think even when I buy like the latest iPad, I'm doing a ton of reading on it and watching videos. And you think, who's watching? I am. I'm watching it. And so I get it. You're saying someone's about to spend a couple of $1,000 or $10,000 to $20,000 on something. They want to read as much as possible. Let me come back now to what we did at Mixergy. One of the things that we did was, you lived in Austin, Ari was in Austin, April was in Austin. It felt like everyone was in Austin. And so at one point I came to Austin and you had a friend who we were going to use some space, maybe come even to your place. And you said, you know, I've got a friend right at the heart of Austin, beautiful place. Let's go stay with him for the day and we'll just talk. And I remember you came in fully armed, a lot of markers, a lot of like big piece of paper with a sticky on the back and so on. Now we have a checklist whenever we have meetings. Those items are on our checklist so we could always come back to them.
Post-it notes.
A bunch of post-it notes. All the things that I can't stand. I don't love any of them, but I see the value. And now that it's on our checklist that we always will have it whenever we do an offsite meeting. Because for me, I just like want, give me an Apple, whatever it is, so I can connect my device and a Chrome. We always now, whatever the Chrome stupid thing is that connects to TV and the Apple stupid thing, Chromecast and the Apple TV. Yeah. We have one of each and we usually use a Chromecast and that's what we use. But it still helps to have something for people to draw on and I appreciate that. And so we do it. Anyway, you came in and you said, Andrew, what I want you to do now is just answer a bunch of questions with all of us here and we'll all understand the product better as we're writing, creating, and so on. And one of the things that you forced me to do was say, who is in the audience? Just describe them. Mm-hmm. And in the description, I said they do love to talk about and try the newest thing in technology, even if it goes nowhere. You will say there's this new thing and they'll go, yeah, of course, I tried it. Here's how it worked for me. And that's unusual. Most people don't want to try another piece of software. They're just happy where they are. Our people do. And you kept pushing me and you said, like, for example, what? And at the time, this is like 4 years ago, 3 years ago on Product Hunt, chatbots were just coming at the very top all the time. And I keep monitoring Product Hunt every morning. And you said, okay, let's just put this on the board. And I said it somewhere towards the end of the day, Rachel, I'm really quieting down here, but I don't think this is useful. And I'm trying not to be
I remember that.
Right? I know, I like to take over every meeting.
Oh, gosh. That's the understatement of the year.
Talk about the way that my meeting style.
Oh, gosh. So we start out with an agenda, and we usually have some kind of a Google Doc. Because somebody has to lead the meeting. Because if otherwise, you're all just going to hang out on a conference call and, like, stare at each other or, you know, be texting somebody else. And so we'd start out with a meeting and we'd have the Google Doc and we'd have certain things we're supposed to cover. And we've got a time budget and I've run meetings for years. So I'm pretty good at, like, speeding things up or slowing things down. And then you get Andrew in there and, like, you know, you'd be really good, like, for the first 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes in. And then you'd be like, yeah, but hey, can we talk about this one thing? And, like, at the beginning, like, as you and I have, like, gotten a little bit more comfortable with each other, you know, in the beginning, I'd let you run, like, and I'd be like, Andrew would, like, wander, and then I'd be getting, you know, 3-4 minutes, and I'd be, like, kind of, like, watching my, looking at my watch, like, you couldn't see it, but I was like, okay, I'll give him a little while, then I'm going to rein him in and go back. And then later on, as we went along, and you started to get into the meeting cadence, you'd be like, okay, Andrew, we'll come back to that later, but let's go into this other thing right now. Because you have such great ideas and you have, you know, a lot of energy, and it's by nature, because in the meeting, you're still the boss. And I'm going to use that as the air quotes, because, like, you know, you're the guy that signs everybody's paychecks, or, you know, in some bigger companies, it may be, you know, that you're the one who, you know, people would report up to. But, like, by nature, everybody just, like, takes a seat. It's like, oh, it's the boss. The boss needs, the boss is the boss. We have to follow what he
does. Right. We can't talk back to him, but that's a lot.
And I said, like, I challenge everybody that's listening to this, like, if you're the boss, what happens if you just shut up and sit back? And because sometimes that's necessary, because, like, now, you know, as, you know, the process has gone on and we had the meetings and we had the structure. And then I turned it over to Maricela and we taught her how to run them. And then it was just a couple weeks ago, she and I had a call, you know, talking about, like, how things are running and how things are going. And, you know, I know that she's, like, ramped things up another notch just based upon some of those things. And, you know, it's the process of letting others take the lead. And now if you don't show up, like, the business still goes on. Like, Bot Academy still runs.
I like that. So you're right. The reason that I can't shut up sometimes is I feel like we need to get to something really substantive and actionable immediately. And not just immediately, every second. Yeah. If it's not actionable and it's not done now, it just sucks ass. Yeah. So why are we sitting and dissecting who these people are? What are we going to do with it? What's the plan for what to do with it? And I have no faith in anything. I don't, like, take things well on faith, unless somebody's a super strong leader who says, I've done this a million times and this worked. So actually that came to me from having a kid. I had this nanny come into my house and I remember going, why am I trusting this nanny with my kid? The woman is not in the country legally. There's nothing holding her in the country. I don't have that much of background information on her. I'm trusting my kid with her where I wouldn't trust my laptop with a friend. I always take it out with me. My wife didn't have my passcode until last year. We've been together almost 10 years. And I realized what it was. Part of it is just my natural, I need to control. But also it was more than that. The nanny was really good because I could see that she knew her stuff. She knew the little details, like to tell me we're going to open up these bottles that you didn't think you'd need till later. She knew how to help my kid fall asleep. She knew how to change a diaper and do it fast and efficiently and cleanly. She knew how to calm the baby down. And I realized when someone's really good, you just trust them. And yes, I made a few phone calls, of course, to make sure that my kid was in good hands, but you just trust them. And I realized a lot of times what I was doing was starting out with someone who was new, who's figuring it out with me. And I don't do very well at just saying, you're new, you'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm much better at saying, oh, you're so much better than me. I'm confused completely by this, but I know the outcome's going to be good. Go run with it. I'm much better at handling people like that nanny than I am, or at the opposite end, someone who's brand new and then just micromanaging. So that was an issue.
That's so team related though, because like some people are like, why do you pay these people a lot of money? Like all of us have been in a business somewhere where we have somebody that's exceptionally well paid. And sometimes we're like, you're not that, you know, good, but like what you're paying people for when they are good, is you're paying them for all the learning, for all the mistakes they've made, so that you can shortcut that learning curve and just jump to the results. And when you hire somebody brand new, they're making mistakes on your dime.
And so with you, I knew you could do it. And I forced myself to shut up, even though it seemed like it wasn't going anywhere. And then we kind of walked away and we realized this whole chatbot thing is actually kind of exciting. I've got to just keep talking up. It was more than that. I've got to talk up all the things that are interesting and new to the audience. I started talking about this chatbot thing and then this big thing happened. Let me take a moment to talk about my second sponsor and then we'll get right back into it. Second thing is, second sponsor is a company called TopTal. One of the people that I hired from TopTal is a guy named Jack. I got into a situation, Rachel, where I just wasn't sure, where's our money going? Where's it coming in? I knew to the penny, literally to the penny. I know that the Wall Street Journal every month charges me $4. I can't stop paying attention to that. I know it all. I go over literally every expense at the company every month. What I wanted was like a big picture understanding of what was I missing? What was going on? So I went to TopTal and I said, you guys have a new finance division that you bought and now you've made it part of your offering. Can I hire someone who's going to be my part-time CFO? And they said, let's talk. And so again, this is the same process everyone else goes through. And they asked me what I was looking for, why I wanted it. And then they reshaped it, renamed it, re-everything it. And they came back to me and said, actually, Andrew, what you're really looking for is a profitability advisor. And then they gave me a handful of people to talk to because usually they do just two or one, but they wanted me to see a broad spectrum because I wasn't super clear on what I needed. One of them was this woman who just graduated from Stanford University, was working, I think, in an oil business. And so she had a very like academic approach. Another one was an entrepreneur who had multiple businesses, was later in life, who just had a lot of experience running companies. There was one other person, then there was Jack. What Jack had was he was working for a major management company and he was also someone who had run a company for an investment group. And what I liked about him was as I was telling him the problem, he said, let's do some screen share. So we did screen share. I showed him my finances. And then as we continued, he said, well, and actually, Andrew, I think you're missing an opportunity here with taxes. And why are you not paying your quarterly taxes? And I said, well, one of my interviewees said, you don't have to pay it. You could pay the fine and then keep using the money. He says, you actually don't need to keep the money. You've got enough in the bank. What you should do is take all that money out of the bank and you should take a loan because interest rates are really, anyway, all that stuff. He started giving me advice on what my wife should be doing with her money coming in from work and all that. I said, great. Jack, you're hired. And he and I have been now working together every month. He more than paid for himself. It's like having a McKinsey level advisor for the company and for the finances all coming in from TopTal. If you're out there and you're looking to get some help with your finances, TopTal will tell you that they will put together spreadsheets for you for your investors or for getting investors. They'll tell you they'll put together decks for you that will help persuade people. I'm going to tell you, you can even hire like CFO type people from them and management advisors from them. What you can't do is hire that person who's going to be like your cheap person in some random part of the world for $5 an hour. Screw that. TopTal is not in that business. But if you're looking to pay a little bit more because you want your business to grow a lot more, fucking A, go to TopTal, TopTal.com/Mixergy. Oh, they don't like that I curse. I don't think they like that I curse. TopTal.com/Mixergy. I really love them. I've used them forever. And if you use that link, you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit for free when you pay for 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period. Go to top in the top of your head, Towels and Talent, TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. All right. Yeah, man. I'm going off again. This is a problem that I have with my advertisers. I can't wing it. We hired this woman, Jackie, to create study stories for me. I need to be more disciplined and stick with her case studies instead of just going off. What do you think? Be open with me. What do you think of the way that I did that ad?
So I know this parts of the story. Like I didn't know that Jack had done all this, but I love that you're just being honest. Now, from the So the authenticity is there. From the sponsor's perspective, the cursing is a really interesting question because, some people don't care, some people do care. And, in this day and age, it's just such a good conversation, piece anyway. But outside of the cursing, the corporate part of me still remembers, trust me, I was at Tractor Supply, and this is back way early in my career, and, I now curse a lot more than I ever did. And, our CEO cursed in some of the meetings, and I was, offended mm-hmm. that, he was, dropping, words like that in the middle of the, in front of, the whole company. And I was like, I don't think that's appropriate for, senior management of, Fortune 500 companies.
I don't think it's appropriate for me to do in the ad either. That was just me getting carried away. And if I could, I would edit that out to stay focused. I also don't think that they cared that much about it. I don't like the rambliness. It's too rambly, that ad. That ad needs to stay more focused. I need to stay more disciplined within the ads. The ads are actually a big challenge for me because I do them when I'm passionate about them. And my passion means that I sometimes go off a little bit too much and talk too much. And I need to
It's the exact same as your email, though. See, the difference is, this, you get one cut, right? With your email, what actually goes out in the final product in those emails has been edited and edited and edited, where things just get cut. Because in the email process, we start with a story, and you're talking, and then, that gets written up, and then you start chopping, and you're like, hey, we can make this better. So I think that's just the part where the editor has already done.
All right, speaking of email, one thing that you helped me realize was I don't have to write my own email myself. That was a big issue for me, other people writing. And then you said, look, I've worked with other clients. They don't start with blank pages. Have someone else write something. Even if you don't like it, then you hate it. And that's easier for you to write against than a blank page. And maybe they actually take your words and they shape it the way you express it to them or the way you meant to. And it sounds better and you can just go and refine it. And that's been a huge thing. It wasn't until I read a book about Johnny Carson where he was shocked when he got into Hollywood, when he got into show business, to see that the people who are standing up on stage didn't write all their own material. And he had that realization, okay, I have to accept it. And then he had a bunch of writers. It wasn't until then that I realized, okay, I got to accept this too. And it's helped. It's helped, but it's also a challenge. Finding writers has been my big goal for this year is to work with better writers and to find them. It's been a pain in the ass. Let's come back to the story. We then were sitting and thinking about this chatbot thing, and I said, this is too exciting. We need to do something with it. And the way we experimented with it was I just sent out an email to my audience saying, I'm playing with this chatbot thing. Come and sign up. And so they'd sign up. A bunch of them did. Actually, it was 250 of them. And the reason it was 250 is I didn't link to the chat experience properly. I linked to what is a mistake. And now I know it because I made that mistake, but 250 people is good. And what they get is a daily message from me teaching them what I learned about chat as a way of reaching an audience. And then from there, we said, let's see if anyone will buy anything. And then I started selling. Yeah. And at first it was $70 call with me to do chat bots and I would do it.
But time out, slow down just a second here, because that call with you, what everybody that's probably listening to this is thinking, oh, Andrew went and wrote a sales page. And I remember the marketing part of me, this is the stuff I don't always tell you.
Tell me.
The marketing part of me was appalled. Andrew did a form. What's that?
I use gravity forms. Yep.
Yeah. You made a gravity form. You linked him to a gravity form, step one, step two, step three, step four. And then you had, pay me here because you have a way to get money through gravity
within form. A gravity form. Yeah. Directly connected into Stripe. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the marketer in me was just dying inside. It's oh my goodness, this is so
I didn't
ghetto.
Know. Why? Why didn't you like it? I didn't know that you felt that way.
Because
I thought it was brilliant.
It's missing all the words. It's just so basic. I want to at least build a short sales page and put a button so they can click and be committed.
So here's what I did. I'll tell you my process and then I want to hear from you. Be open. I promise I'm going to shut up so that I can hear. What I did when I got fascinated by interviewing as a conversation process. And so when it came to interview heroes, I emailed out to 1,000 people on the list and I said, look, while I was away on paternity leave, a bunch of people asked me about how to do interviews. Would you want me to teach you how to do this even? And if somebody said no, I said, why not? And like the thing about gravity forms and all forms really is you could easily say to somebody who says no, why not? And then collect that data. Yes. If they said yes, I said, what do you want to learn? And then I would say, okay, great. I'm going to do it. Pay a deposit and then we'll figure out what the price is later. And I'd see if people didn't, I'd say, okay, would you pay a deposit? If they said no, I'd say, why aren't you going to pay a deposit for it? If they said yes, I'd say, why? What do you want to know? And then I'd let them pay. And then I would take that little bit of text and I would put it on the next version to the next 1,000 people. And then I would continue asking that question. I would keep pulling out sentence here, sentence there, and putting it in, and then I'd end up with a sales page. With the chatbot, I was kind of on the same path saying, do you want to learn how to create one of these things? If you do, say yes and then tell me why. If you don't, say no and tell me why, and then I take you through it. But you don't like it. Why?
Well, so like I like things to look pretty. Like there's a part of me that just likes everything to be nicely visually designed and whatnot. But like from the process perspective, it's the absolutely right thing to do because you're doing the MVP approach for everybody that's in the software world. You know, it's just the minimal viable product. Like what do you need to know? What do you need to do? But it's like, it goes back to the chicken and the egg. Do you build the marketing funnel and the process and all the sales pieces and then see if people buy it? Or do you see what people are going to buy and then build it? So what you did in that very beta stage, like it was even ghetto before beta, because like we took all of that research and then we built out the beta sales process. And that research enabled the first version, which we did in January. And then we turned around and took what we learned from selling the second time, because, you know, phone calls first, then we sold the first version of the course. And then we took all of that and then we launched what would be considered a more proper launch, like with opt-ins and lead magnets and sales funnels and webinars and sales pages and like the full thing.
So basically, it wasn't that bad. It was just ugly. And I've had an issue with ugly forever. Like even right now, my backdrop should have something that looks good on it. I just don't have the design eye. That's definitely been a huge issue for me. And I need to find solutions for it. Part of it was we ended up working with Jose, who you helped me meet through someone else. And that's one of the advantages of working with you, that you've worked with a lot of these people. I could give a list, but people can go see it on quantifying.com/clients. And so the people who they use and you've gotten to know because you're in their project management software, you were able to introduce me to, and I could work with many of them. That helped.
Yeah. And I've spent a lot of time at conferences. Like that's like one of the pieces that most folks like underestimate. Like I don't go to the conferences for the content. I go to conferences for the networking. So, and a lot of times it's like you meet somebody and it's like, what do you do? What are you into? What's your experience? Yeah. And it's not always about the here and now. Sometimes it's about the 3 months later, the 6 months later, the 9 months later. Oh yeah, I met that guy at Traffic and Conversion.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, had that. And between both, you know, in the world of hiring, because I've hired a lot of folks. A lot of people that I've hired know I've hired them. A lot of people that I've fired don't know that I've fired them because that was through coaching. But I usually coach somebody else that was firing them. But in the hiring and firing process, it's like you got to learn what you need. And then, like, what are the important parts? And then what are, you know, just the nice to have things that really may not matter? So like going back to like, you know, our, you know, very first iteration for Bot Academy, you know, the nice to have was the looking pretty, you know, that really didn't matter. What mattered was are people going to pay? So, but like with a designer, what you have to have is, you know, it's absolutely critical that what they do looks nice and that they deliver on time. Now, a lot of people would tell you delivering on time is optional, but
no, that when you've got everyone else working with that schedule, you can't have one person just stop everything, especially if that person is designing the sales page. Okay, so then we said, this is working. We're going to sell it the way that we wanted. I remember as I was walking and I said to you, what can we do to go big with this? And we kind of made a plan for what it was going to be. It was going to be buying ads, and you really tasked me with finding somebody to buy ads for us. And that was tough.
Yep.
Because yeah. The difficulty with buying ads is the individual people who buy ads do it okay, but they don't have enough insight into it. The bigger agencies do a great job, but they don't want to start with someone who hasn't figured out and like what works. And so if you don't spend more than $15,000-$20,000 with the agency, doesn't want to deal with you. Even if they're nice to me because it's like, hey, it's a Mixergy guy, let's just help him out.
Yep.
They can't take on a business that's doing $5,000 a month in ads. So that took us a long time. We eventually found Ethan Sigmund, who it was John Lee Dumas. Of all the people who I'd kind of worked with, John Lee Dumas had the most freaking dialed in business out there. Every aspect of his business, I never would have known until I saw him. And every aspect of his business, super organized and dialed in. And I said, who do you use? And he said, I use this guy, Ethan. I must really like you because I'm making this introduction. So he did. Ethan helped. Partnering up with other people helped. Here's what else was useful in that process. I wasn't pushing the people who we wanted to partner with to move fast enough because there's a whole lot of me like evaluating people, letting them just make their own decision and do whatever you want. And he said, Andrew, you have to go in there and just tell them this is important and they need to do this right now. And that this is what, and if they ask you any more questions, tell them this is what it is. Because with chatbots, people had tons of questions. They just weren't sure about anything. And you said basically they're never going to know everything. Just tell them you're not going to know everything. Just make a decision. Let's do it. I like that. I like that about you, that you say, you can say, Andrew, you need to move faster. You need to do this. Stop being a pussy.
Right? I don't know if I've ever told you.
You've never actually used that word.
Like, but I've said that in so many other ways, the exact same thing.
Yeah. You know what? I was trying to think of a synonym in my head before saying it. And I said, no, I can't come up with one, but I'm not going to wuss out of talking. Wuss is the synonym I should have had. Okay. So that's what did it. And that's what helped us grow. Things got good from there. And we've continued to grow that part of the business. I eventually liked it so much. It was becoming too distracting to Mixergy. And like, what the hell is this whole chat thing doing on Mixergy became a big question. And I said, I had to either decide, do I love it enough to keep going or do I not? I said, I love it. So we bought a domain. It's Bot Academy. Anyone listening can go and check it out. Let's talk about now that we've gotten to that. Let's talk about just like working with me. What's that like? You said before we started talking about me as a leader might be interesting. What do you think of my leadership skills and or what is it like? Not what you think of it. What do you notice?
So first of all, what you don't talk a lot about is like where you are now is not where you were 3 years ago. Like all the way along, you've been making slow improvements as a leader at like actually giving direction versus a lot of times early on, it was Andrew was like, hey, what do you think? 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 Hey, so-and-so thinks this, so-and-so thinks that. I'm like, I kid you not. And then I'd be like, you know, we'd be like 30 minutes later and it's like, okay, we haven't decided anything. We've just done a lot of talking. And so like that process has shortened up dramatically. There are still places where you ask everybody for their opinion and you're really good about making people feel heard, making people feel valued. And you're really good at like all those conversations. Like, you know, I think everybody listening to Mixergy, if nothing else, should just learn how to have conversations and channel their inner Andrew and ask the awkward questions that they really want to know but are kind of afraid to ask. But you know, being good at challenging the status quo and always pushing is both good and bad, because like we do something and then it's like, how do we make it better? We do something and then it's like, okay, well, what about trying this? What about trying that? So in some cases, like the same thing that makes it great is also part of the downfall, because then it's like, how do you decide when to change something, when to challenge something, and when do you decide, okay, we're going to do that, but not yet?
You know what it is? It's, I started out, Mixergy was different from a previous company. At Mixergy, I started out doing my own thing, and then I moved on to working with virtual assistants who are going to do individual tasks like editing. And they, if I didn't give them clear directions and I just expected them to know what to do, they weren't getting it done right because they weren't here to watch me because they didn't know what to do. And so I got really clear on here's exactly what you do step by step. And I got good at it. I'd create these docs with screenshots and arrows and everything. And then I'd get what I was looking for. And then I started moving to working with people who had their own opinions, which was really good because you know, I wanted that. I wanted somebody to come up in a pre-interview, like Jeremy Weiss, who did the original set of pre-interviews. I like that he was able to befriend the guests and hang out with them after an interview. And he's become super good friends with a lot of our guests. I like that he had opinions about what we should be asking, about how we can direct the conversation. And I said, okay, great. I'm ceding to their direction on this stuff because they see the beginning and they could take it from there. The challenge eventually was, I would say, I think we need to do something, and they would have their own opinions. And then how do I connect my opinion with theirs? And it would be things like, going back to documentation, I need you to document. Oh, no, I can't. Then what do you think we should do? We have this big mess here. I'm okay with doing something different. I don't need a Google Doc for everything. What do you think we should do? And then it became this like, I don't know, but I can't do this. And so what you told me to do was, look, Andrew, they don't have an answer for this. If they're just hemming and hawing, it's not because they don't want to do it. Just they tell them to do it. It's kind of like eating your vegetables. You may know that you need to do it and you're not doing it, not because it's wrong, but because there's no one telling you, go eat your vegetables. Eating your vegetables is documenting. Eating your vegetables is following up in a certain way. All right, that helped. Let me see what else I have here in my notes. Conversation. You brought up a couple of times here that I sometimes go personal in conversation. What is that like? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so it's good because, so it would be bad if you went personal on conversation and it was only ever one way. And I don't know that there's ever been a question that I've like asked you that like, you know, you don't give as good as you get, you know?
Meaning, I mean, asking you, who are you dating? And then I don't talk about my wife with my situation with my wife, or ask you about an argument that you've had with someone and not get into like an issue that I've had. Yeah.
And that makes all the difference. But like, I remember like early on in some of those, it's like, you know, I was kind of like a little bit on edge sometimes because I'm like, I don't know what Andrew's going to ask me. This might get really weird. That like, I think the ultimate bit of weirdness was probably when we all were actually at that meeting in Austin with Ari and April, and we all had gone out to this Mexican place and we all were talking about, you know, hey, who was the first person, you know, you ever had sex with? When did you lose your virginity and stuff? And we got to talking and it's like, those are not the normal kind of conversations people have.
I don't believe asked that. I don't believe I asked that at that lunch or that dinner. I could be wrong, but I don't believe I did. I'm very careful to not, if I'm working with someone, I could be wrong, but I'm careful not to ask about their virginity, but I do ask about prying questions. And I had no problem asking you about your brother's situation.
Yeah.
Am I wrong about that?
You were not that direct. Like the way we got into talking about that, you made sure everybody was comfortable to a certain degree. Like, you know, like there's that whole space of like, how far do you go and like, where are the boundaries? Really good at pushing boundaries, but you're not, you know.
Right. I want to go up until your boundary, but not any further. But I don't want to wuss out and not get to your boundary. But I don't think I've ever asked you about when you lost your virginity. I actually think that would be inappropriate. And if I did, maybe it was like in an opening where...
And I think we may have been talking about ages. We were talking about how old were you rather than...
You know what? I'm careful not to go beyond where I see people be uncomfortable, but I'm also possibly wrong where I sometimes go where people do feel comfortable. I can never tell. Anyway. Like I wasn't sure in this conversation if you were going to talk about Ramit, for example, but I am 100% sure that if I hadn't asked it, I would have regretted it. And I'll tell you where that comes from. Fred Wilson. I interviewed Fred Wilson soon after Twitter, one of his big investments, had decided they were going to cut off all developers. Instead of asking him, hey, Fred, you're on the board. I think he was on the board at the time. You're an investor in Twitter. You guys just grew from developer partnerships where they were all creating these apps on Twitter. And now you guys just slaughtered all these developer relationships in one fell swoop. Why? And I didn't ask it because I was being too nice. And I thought, this was what's on my head. In my mind, I didn't tap into that and ask him, and I'm not going to make that mistake again. So that's what it comes with. But you know what, actually, I think I might be talking over you. It sounds like what you're saying to me is, Andrew, you do go to a place where it's uncomfortable and it might be wrong.
Sometimes, absolutely. But like, really? Even in this conversation, because like, let's talk about the Ramit thing. I mean, it's like anybody that knows me really well knows like that was 3.5 years of my life. It was incredibly successful. It ended extremely abruptly, at least on, you know, my part. Obviously, you know, it was something we were in the middle of a launch, you know. Ramit was at that place in his business where he was like, he wanted exclusivity with everybody. and wanted people to come on and be employees. And, you know, one day I got a document to sign and it's like, hey, you know, you can't ever talk about this, that, or the other. And, you know, I sent it to my attorney and I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? And I didn't want to be Ramit's employee. You know, I didn't want to be his COO. And, it, you know, it's funny because like that is, even though I had functioned in that for, you know, 3.5 years, behind the scenes, the part that I've never really talked about publicly is during that time, I systematized that. Like I had a team of people working for me and with me where we were managing his entire business and I wasn't in it 24/7. I was working with other clients. You know, that's when I was doing work with Dane and Andy at the foundation, was doing some consulting with Eben Pagan's team around, you know, some of their branding and, you know, any number of other projects, but I was still, you know, contractually fulfilling my obligations for what I was doing with Ramit. But I had a project manager who would ghost. You know, people have ghost writers. I had ghost project managers.
I mean, they would just disappear. Would
No. They would like ghost write. Not, they wouldn't ghost me. They would like ghost project manage as me. So I had no idea. Yeah, she was working with me and it was something, it's about hiring the right person, hiring the right fit, making sure they've got the right voice.
You're saying she would log in as you to the project management software and create tasks the way you would. Okay.
Correct.
Yes.
And I would oversee her work and we would get everything done. At the same time with the foundation, I had Blake that was working with me and Blake was working on the foundation stuff. And there were days when I would be bouncing between different projects at the same point in time. I was doing a favor for a friend in corporate and working on a multinational consolidation of a company that had bought another company and they were mixing up their SAP, you know, software. It goes back to what I used to do in corporate. I was doing some of that on the side. And like, so I had a lot of balls that I was juggling in the air, but I had a really great team of people that were working with me. And they understood how I worked and I was able to train them such that I could bounce into a project. They would prepare a document for me. It was in my style. We would share that document with the team. I'd hang up the phone from one call, run to the bathroom, grab a drink of water, hop back on another call of something that I didn't even know where it was, but the team had prepared it for me. So we could run through it because everybody was doing product launches. So it was the same underlying core process, you know, in different people. So it was variations on a theme.
Yeah.
But if you set up your business right, you can do that. Now, like fast forward, and I no longer do the done for you services. I've, you know, really decided as much as I love having teams and stuff that I really don't love the obligation of, you know, just chasing cash and business to grow. That whole space is, you have to get to a certain momentum. Like, and a lot of us go through places where we scale up businesses and scale down businesses. I'm in the space right now where I've scaled down.
Yeah, you're saying, look, you're saying you didn't want to have a lot of people on your team and continue to do that and grow it and then become the project manager for Mixergy with a team of people who work for you that we, right. I even asked if I could hire you here, if I could partner up with you, I would have done equity even just so we can like get you to run. But you said, no, I don't want to run the team. I don't want that kind of obligation. And so we switched to a coaching relationship where you coach me, you help me with decisions and you push me. I got to ask you. First of all, well, we'll get to how other people, if they're interested, they could work with you. But I'm going to regret if I don't ask you a follow-up question on the, do I get too personal? Do I get to a place where it's uncomfortable, where you don't want to go, where you've noticed other people not want to go? What's your take on that? I don't want to ask questions that you feel are violating.
So I think there's a difference between like violating and uncomfortable. So this is a really fine line. Because this also goes back to, you know, a phenomenal marketing technique, voyeurism. Everybody loves to watch other people. I mean, that's why reality TV, like, oh my gosh, how many different episodes of Survivor have there been or any other things? People love to watch other people be uncomfortable or do things they wouldn't do. And I've seen you on Mixergy ask questions that made people really uncomfortable. I remember, you know, team emails we've had where somebody's like, hey, you can't air that episode. or don't air that episode, or let's record another interview. And you know, there have been a lot of spaces where you could have done the easy out and said, okay, yeah, that's fine. But it's part of the secret sauce of Mixergy is that you're going to ask those questions that push the edges. Now, have you ever been completely inappropriate? No. Okay. Has it been awkward sometimes? Yeah, but I mean, such is life.
All right, good. But, I'm glad to hear that. I do check in a bunch and I want to make sure that it's not. And but there's always a danger in that. And I think I've accepted the risk. The risk is that I could actually say something that really hurts someone's feelings or that it feels violating or a little too personal. And I've accepted that that's a risk and I'm coming at it with good intentions. But I do worry about that. There have been nights literally where I've been up going, did I ask that? And where I'm especially concerned is with women. I don't want to get to a situation where women feel like I'm asking them super personal questions that I wouldn't ask men. And if anything, I find myself overly worrying about that, where I wouldn't worry about it with men. And then I think, well, is that wrong for me to have done that? I'll tell you where the big payoff for me is for these types of questions. I interviewed Ross Burdoff. He is the guy who was the founding CEO of HomeAway. Fantastic business. In leading up to interviewing him, all I saw was articles about whether he cashed out too much money from HomeAway. This was a multi-billion dollar business. He started a new business called Zen Business. And as he's talking, I'm looking at his freaking arm. There's something on his arm. And I think this is too personal. His arm is his own business. You're here to talk to him about his business. But then I go, I got to ask him. And I ask him in my usual way, which is it inappropriate for me to ask you what's on your arm or something like that? And he lights up. Instead of, I thought this could be the end, he lights up and he shows me something on his arm that's like giant tattoo, one of the biggest tattoos I've ever seen on an arm. And it says something like stop fear. I forget what the exact phrase is. And I realized, here's a guy who had a successful company who has to tattoo to his arm a reminder that that fear is in his head and that he's not going to let it stop him. And that sent me down a path of understanding fear. What fear? I always thought as a kid, especially once you cash out millions of dollars, you have nothing to be afraid of. And then he helped me understand this fear never goes away. It changes. Now it's something you have to deal with. And for him, it was tattoo. For me, it's my own thing. And that is gold to me, because every article that I read about him was, is he cashing too much? Is he doing too well? Is he too rich? Turns out there is no such thing.
And it goes back to just that real connection with humans, because it is really easy, especially in this day and age when we all like have had so much media training to be politically correct. And, you know, I mean, and this is not like, you know, out of any type of movement or another, but it's like, you know, when I'm talking with people, I'm like, hey, I'm Rachel. And when we start talking about dating, I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm into men. I'm like, where I came from, I grew up in Wisconsin. I grew up in rural Wisconsin outside of Green Bay. You know, the only reason why Black people existed growing up was to play football. And I mean, okay, that is not an appropriate statement, but that was my reality.
When you noticed it, and you're saying that it wasn't the truth. It was just the way that it was presented to you where you were growing. Yes, I was always strange to me when I grew up in New York. That world didn't exist to me. Everyone was all mixed in together. It wasn't until I'd go out to business trips and fly to somewhere and go, what is this? This is such a weird like separation. And you're saying you noticed it when you were growing up.
Yeah. And I mean, I never I always thought the other side of the tracks. I mean, because I grew up in Wisconsin, like it was all rural. It was dairy farms. I mean, it was Midwest. It was Leave It to Beaver. And, you know, I was in an honors class that we took for Hemingway and Faulkner, because I thought that sounded more interesting than some of the other classes in literature. And we went down to Mississippi, and I had never been to Mississippi. And it was just incredible, because I realized like the other side of the tracks, I mean, it's not just a phrase. It's like literally like I had just never been outside of my own little bubble, even though, you know, I was, you know, well educated, working on my undergrad, you know, very smart, you know, decently read, you know, not necessarily heavily TV'd, but it's like until you get exposure to like different cultures, different ways of being, different food groups, you know, you just don't know what's out there. And so what, you know, if you meet somebody that's different than you and they have something that's going on, especially when it's something that's visible or something in their business or something to talk about, if you don't dive down that hole and take a moment to be curious, I mean, especially without a spirit.
And that's what I do try to. Yes, I do that all. I can't help it. I do try to watch out and do try to learn how I do it, how to do it right. I'm looking here at the transcript. I love that we do transcripts to understand what exactly did I do to like bring it up without making it feel uncomfortable. I basically said to him, I've been wondering whether I should ask you about the tattoo on your arm. And he jumped in and interrupted me and said, oh God, yes. I said, what is it? Do you want to see it? I said, yes. And then I had to ask him to bring it up a little higher. And then he says, the tattoo says fear is a liar. And the word fear isn't big. All right. So here's what we learned here today. Number one, I think order and organization is important. Number two, I think people have much more credibility and ability to impose that order when they've done it before. And I think the reason I couldn't do it so easily before is because I wasn't sure what's the structure, how is it done? And the fact that you shortcutted it by saying, here's how we use project management before, here's the outline that we use for emails, all was super helpful. I think that I like working with people who have that kind of experience, and I could never do enough of that. And then I ask inappropriate questions and I worry about them. We've discovered that. I can send conversations off on the wrong tracks, which used to be an issue for me with Mixergy. It sometimes is. I think we covered a lot of different ground here today where I wouldn't ordinarily. What else? What's a big thing that you took away from this?
Yep. So not so much a takeaway, but the thing that you've done all the way along is iterate. Like you rinse and repeat and make it better. Because if you look at launching Bot Academy, if you had stopped after the first time and not iterated and gone back and done it again and again and again, and it's what you've done with the Mixergy processes, it's what's happened, you know, in so many other areas of the business, is take something, get it started, and keep going. Don't give up. And don't be afraid to make the mistakes.
I am really good at that. I'm really good at when you get something, when I find something, just continuing and iterating and iterating and iterating. The challenge with that for me is always shake it up also. To find a way. And so adding Bot Academy helped shake it up. It shook up the team. Now there are people who work on that who then make the rest of Mixergy that much better. But I realize that I need to shake it up.
Yeah, you switched your questions. You switched from what do you think to how do you think we should change that? Or how do we make it better? Like, it's just such a minor tweak. Mm-hmm.
All right. Your website does not seem to be accepting at this point any new clients.
I actually am.
New clients?
I am. So I'm looking for companies and teams to work with. I'm totally out of the done for you space. So like if you work with me, I need to be working with you and your team so I can help coach them and coach you. And most of the times I either work in like a business coaching role where I support whoever's leading with, you know, whatever they're going through from growth and team and change and business. And I also work with folks on project basis where we're working on some kind of either major project for their business. In a lot of cases, that's information product launches and marketing campaigns. And then sometimes we'll do just kind of like a small starter project to see that we get to know each other, that we like each other, because you know, nobody wants to make a commitment without getting to, you know, feel out each other. So a lot of times we'll just say, hey, we've got this small project to start on. You know, let's do that. Let's see if we like one another and then let's go from there.
Yeah, especially since this is such a personal relationship, you're really, it's almost like you're getting hired to work full time with someone without working full time with someone, because you're in my life. We will share like my financials on the call. We'll share the issues that I've had with people on the call. And Rachel and I have a more of a coaching relationship now where it's a once a week call. If anyone wants to go check out Rachel, you can go to quantifying.com. And I guess at some point she's going to start accepting clients. It'll be on there.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
And there'll be a form they can fill out and give me a little bit of information about them, and then we'll go from there.
All right. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first, we'll do your email right. It's called Active Campaign. Check them out at activecampaign.com/Mixergy. The second will help you hire an ex-phenomenal developer, or in my case, I've hired a finance person from them. Jack is amazing. Go check them out at toptal.com/Mixergy. And one final thing that we're doing at our company this year. I interviewed this guy, Scott Bintz, who had this truck part company where he sold truck parts, and I think he was selling $3, $4 million. I forget the exact number. It seems great, but he wasn't liking the company. And now when I think about it, I realize the margins weren't probably huge. So it wasn't like he was cashing out $3, $4 million a year. He was just eking out a nice profit, but he didn't love his company. He didn't love working there. And he said, I need to do something. And he went and he started to go to Google to see how they run their company. He went to Zappos to see how they run their company. He's got all these snapshots of how he did it. And what he discovered was culture. And he started to lay out what his company was about, 6 points. And then he started to not just put them on posters around the office, but say, guys, every month we're going to take one of these things. We're going to use it. We're going to enact it. We're going to do something about it. We're going to reward people about it. And things started to take off. His company became a fun place to work where people cared about the company more, where they all worked better together, where they were able to shock and surprise not just their customers, but their suppliers, because they had this thing that they wanted to bring fun to their clients, bring fun to the team, and also bring fun to the people who they were buying products from. And he took it over $100 million in sales. And then he sold the company. He's now at this point where he's just doing the stuff that he loves. He did a course on how to do that. I've been following it internally at Mixergy every month, a different part of our culture, of our principles of operation. It's been helping our company tremendously. If you want to go and learn from him, he is one of our course leaders at Mixergy. Go to mixergy.com/Scott. And for the next few weeks, at least, until I want that URL, because it's such a sweet URL, it will be linking you to him where you can learn directly from him. It's mixergy.com/Scott. It's fantastic. I love that guy. He sent me coffee, so much coffee. It's months ago, Rachel. I still have it in my house. I guess coffee is part of his passion projects right now. He sent me about a dozen copies of his book, The Principles to Fortune, where he just wrote how he did this. He's at a point in his life where he's just doing stuff he loves. Teaching on Mixergy is one of those things. Mixergy.com/Scott. All right. Thanks, Rachel. Bye, everyone.
Hey, thanks so much.